This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode about science and trust. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. A while ago, we were working on a show about electromagnetic radiation, the invisible signals that power so much of our lives. And we started talking about a show called Better Call Saul. One of the main characters, Chuck, believes he has an allergy to electromagnetic fields. Here he is describing the condition.
Electronic devices create their own electromagnetic fields. The closer I am to such devices, the worse my symptoms.
Which are?
Burning sensation in my skin, sharp cold pain in my bones, muscle fatigue, heart palpitations, blurred vision, tinnitus.
In the show, it seems like Chuck is imagining these symptoms, but many people all over the world say they actually have this illness. Reporter Liz Tung decided to look into whether this was a real condition caused by electromagnetic radiation or not. She started out just Googling around a bit.
Let's try Better Call Saul electricity allergy.
So the first page of results was mostly Better Call Saul discussion boards. But when I Googled the official name, electromagnetic hypersensitivity, I got a much more official result. My top hit was actually the World Health Organization website. In fact, they had a whole page dedicated to EHS.
When you're a science-minded person, seeing something pop up on the WHO website changes the dynamic, right? Makes it more official.
As it turns out, the question of whether electromagnetic hypersensitivity is a quote-unquote real illness or not, and how electromagnetic fields affect our health, is kind of a rabbit hole. Like a rabbit hole inside a rabbit hole inside another rabbit hole.
And as Liz dove deeper into those rabbit holes, the questions became bigger and more philosophical.
Like, what makes an illness real or not real in the first place? Where is the exact line between the science we trust and the science we don't? And when you find scientists who are pitted against each other, how do you decide who to believe?
Let's take a listen to what Liz found, and afterwards we'll talk about why deciding what to believe can be so complicated. Here's Liz.
So what I found on the World Health Organization's website was this.
Okay, EHS is characterized by a variety of nonspecific symptoms, fatigue, tiredness, concentration difficulties, dizziness, nausea.
There was a lot of information. I learned that electromagnetic hypersensitivity, or EHS, is found all over the world, especially, for whatever reason, in Sweden, Germany, and Denmark. I learned that it's theoretically caused by electromagnetic fields, or EMF. And I learned that even though EHS is not an official medical diagnosis, that doesn't mean it's been ignored either. The World Health Organization acknowledges that it is a real thing that causes real suffering. It even launched its own international EMF project to research the health risks of electromagnetic fields. What I didn't find was an answer to what exactly EHS was. So to find out, I decided to go straight to the source. Or to a source, anyway.
Okay. Hello, check 1, 2. I was out all day, so I need to get some water.
This is Reza Ganjavi. Reza's an IT professional and a musician, currently living in Zurich, though originally from California. And he says his journey with EHS began in 2016. When he started noticing symptoms.
Insomnia, headache, getting old quicker, speeded up aging, restless mind, and so on in sleep.
They weren't terribly unusual symptoms, but weird for Reza. He describes himself as your typical California health yogi. He doesn't smoke or do drugs. He's vegetarian, eats only organic stuff. So he knew something was up, and he started hunting around for a cause. Something, anything, that had changed in the last few weeks.
And I just happened by chance to notice a Wi-Fi signal which was unfamiliar.
Pretty quickly, Reza figured out the source, a new Wi-Fi router that his landlord had installed a few meters from his front door. But as an IT guy, Reza had spent his life around Wi-Fi. Why suddenly would a router be making him sick? To find out, Reza started doing research. A little Googling brought him to electromagnetic hypersensitivity, something he'd never heard of before.
I started with a bias. And my bias was, this is not harmful. Because I really wished that it wasn't harmful. You know what I mean? Because of the convenience. But the more I read, the more I discovered, the more troubled I got about how harmful it actually is.
By it, Reza means electromagnetic fields, sometimes called EMF or electromagnetic radiation, which is produced by pretty much anything that uses electricity. The idea behind EHS is that these electromagnetic fields, specifically in Reza's case, the ones related to all things wireless, like cell phones and Wi-Fi, are fundamentally harmful to all of us. People with EHS just happen to be more sensitive to the effects. Kind of like how UV rays are bad for everyone. It's just people with pale skin who get burned first.
This is not a sickness. I am not sick. I am just a normal, sensitive human who is hurt by a very, very damaging radiation. And it hurts everybody. It causes oxidative stress, which is a precursor to cancer and so on. So it's very risky. You know, nothing might happen, but the risk of it is huge.
As Reza went deeper and deeper into his research, he came across studies that he says document all kinds of harmful long-term effects due to EMF.
Like a variety of tumors, DNA damage, reproductive harm, memory impact, autism, headaches, disorientation, insomnia, thinning of blood-brain barrier, which is very serious, especially for the young, dizziness, fatigue, cardiac arrest, cognitive decline, sperm damage, oxidative stress, eye damage, variety of cancers, brain damage, hearing damage, depression, anxiety, birth defects, heart disease, behavioral issues.
It wasn't long before Reza was a full-on convert to the cause. He started a website called EMF or Electromagnetic Fields Crisis. He wrote petitions and letters, became known as an anti-5G activist. And, of course, he changed the way he lives.
I got rid of the wireless and I connect all my devices with a cable. And that includes my laptops and my phone.
He told me his next project is installing what he calls a shielding blanket on the floor of his apartment. Basically, a big piece of material that's been woven with copper and other metals to block out electromagnetic fields. The goal being to get his apartment to zero radiation. And Reza says now he can tell the difference when he goes outside.
I feel debilitated. If I'm in a very high radiation area, I can see myself just dying if I'm forced to stay there for 2 hours.
As you can probably tell, Reza is absolutely convinced. So it wasn't hard for me to believe his experience or his conviction. But I still wasn't convinced about the basic concept of EHS. Pretty much all of us are constantly bathed in electromagnetic fields, coming from our Wi-Fi and cell phones, not to mention power lines and electronics. How could it be that they're threatening our lives and health without anyone noticing? I wanted to know what science had to say about all this. So I started looking for studies on electromagnetic hypersensitivity. I didn't find that many, just a handful, most of which were either inconclusive or said, no, it's not likely these symptoms are caused by electromagnetic fields.
Well, my name is Eric van der Rongen. I'm a radiobiologist, and I am the vice chairman of the International Commission for Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection, or ICNIRP for short.
As it turns out, Eric's kind of a big deal in this world. ICNIRP is an international nonprofit commission made up of no more than 14 scientists, and they're basically responsible for deciding what's safe and what isn't when it comes to electromagnetic fields. Countries around the world base their legal exposure limits, which govern Wi-Fi and cell phones, on what ICNIRP has to say. So that was the plus side of talking to Eric. The downside was, he'd never seen Better Call Saul.
No, because my wife doesn't like it, but I know of it, yes. We have it on Netflix.
Okay, no matter. I told Eric how I'd gotten into this whole thing, how I'd searched electromagnetic hypersensitivity online and seen this description on the WHO's website, and how that led me to think that maybe they, at least, consider EHS to be a real disease. So I asked, do they?
No. That's not correct. EHS is something that is recognized by the WHO in such a way that they recognize that people have the symptoms and the health complaints that they express. That is something that cannot be denied. But the WHO does not recognize that there is a relation with exposure to electromagnetic fields.
Eric should know. In addition to ICNIRP, he's worked on the WHO's International EMF Project. Not only that, his job working for the Dutch government is literally to write reports on the effects of electromagnetic fields.
From that literature, you cannot draw the conclusion that there is indeed even a hint for an association or a causal relationship between exposure to electromagnetic fields and the complaints and symptoms that people exhibit. So that there is no scientific proof that EHS is real in the sense that the symptoms that people have are caused by exposure to electromagnetic fields.
So where did these fears of electromagnetic fields come from in the first place? Eric told me they date back to World War II, when radar systems were first developed.
The world, after years of secrecy, the story of radar can now be told.
And there are stories that people saw birds dropping dead from radar antennas because they had been exposed to a very high level and they were sort of cooked because of that.
So scientists decided to use heat, as in how much electromagnetic fields heat up human bodies, as a metric for determining safety limits. And so electromagnetic fields were brought to levels that were safe for humans, at least according to these heat-based standards. But Eric says fears have surged again with every new technology. Mobile phones, 3G, 4G, and now
advent of 5G, you see that there are a lot of protests, even more than in previous years. And they're also worldwide. I think that in most countries there's at least some activist groups that oppose the construction of 5G systems.
But by and large, Eric says, the science has borne out that the kinds of EMFs we're exposed to on a daily basis aren't a risk to human health.
As long as the exposure guidelines are observed, they should not pose a threat.
After that conversation, I kind of felt like, okay, case closed. But then Reza told me I had to talk to another scientist, one he knew, a professor named Joel Moskowitz. Joel is a public health guy. He's a physician and a professor at Berkeley's School of Public Health, where he spent more than 40 years studying disease prevention and policy. So EMF wasn't exactly in Joel's wheelhouse, but he first got interested back in 2009 when he was part of a team that found a potential link between mobile phone use and tumor risk.
When that went public, I began to hear from people all over the country who were suffering from various illnesses related to electromagnetic fields, essentially begging me to keep working on this area because there was virtually no one in the U.S. within academic institutions that was addressing these issues.
Joel, being a scientist, says he was dubious at first.
And I was most skeptical about electromagnetic hypersensitivity, but in talking to many of these people who were contacting me, I became pretty convinced that it wasn't just psychosomatic, what they were experiencing.
Joel says he found their stories compelling. But even more than their stories, he says, it was the research that convinced him. According to Joel, there are literally thousands of studies showing biological harm caused by electromagnetic radiation. I asked Joel to name what some of those harms are.
Well, the broad categories are increased tumor risk from long-term exposure, increased risk of reproductive harm in both males and females, neurologic effects, particularly in children, neurologic and cognitive effects, and electromagnetic hypersensitivity.
All of this concerned Joel, enough that he started his own website, safeemr.com, which contains links to more than 1,000 scientific papers on the topic. What that said to me is that there's a not insignificant number of scientists who are worried about electromagnetic fields, though Joel admits that their concerns aren't exactly mainstream.
I think most doctors, particularly in the U.S., I don't know about other countries, will say it's all in your head.
But Joel says he thinks the reason most doctors and scientists think that is because they simply haven't been exposed to the evidence. He says those who have seen the evidence, actual bioelectromagnetic scientists, are worried about the harm caused by electromagnetic radiation. In fact, last year, Joel was among at least 240 scientists from around the world who signed a letter to the UN calling for a strengthening of exposure limits.
I would argue that that constitutes vast majority of EMF scientists who have taken a position on exposure limits in the world. And those 240, it's actually over 250 now, scientists represent 44 different countries they come from.
Okay, so if all this is true, if there is actual physical harm being caused by the electromagnetic fields that surround us constantly, why haven't any of the authorities taken notice? And how did we get here in the first place? Joel says one problem is that from the beginning, the safety standards governing electromagnetic fields have just been totally wrong. Remember those birds Eric told us about who were cooked by radar signals? That made scientists think that the main source of potential harm involved heating. So that's what they measured. And when they didn't find any noticeable heating in animals or humans, they figured it was probably safe. The problem, Joel says, is that the guys who made that decision in the first place were mostly physicists and engineers.
But they failed to understand the biology, and it's at the cellular level that many of these effects begin to initiate. And then there's a cascade of effects that can lead to cell death or to DNA damage.
So the first problem, Joel says, is that from the beginning, we've just been measuring the wrong thing, based on a metric that was chosen not by doctors or biologists, but by engineers. Of course, there have been plenty of opportunities to change those standards over the years, so why haven't we? The answer, according to Joel, is the telecom industry and their lobbyists and their money. In fact, Joel says that ICNIRP, the group that has the most influence over these standards, is itself funded by the telecom industry. Now, Joel isn't the first to make this accusation. But as you may remember, the Dutch scientist I talked to earlier, Eric, is the vice chair of ICNIRP. And he says this is absolutely not true.
Lately, you see that often ICNIRP is being accused of having connections or even tight connections with the industry. These allegations are completely unfounded.
Eric says most of their funding comes from the German government. And he added anyone who wants receipts can check the financial statements on their website. As for Joel's other claims, I decided I needed a third scientist to play judge. Finding this scientist, however, wasn't easy. Finally, I managed to convince Ken Foster. He's a professor emeritus of bioengineering at the University of Pennsylvania. And he's been researching this stuff for going on 50 years. I started off by asking about Joel's argument that the basis for our current exposure limits is just wrong. That being the ability of electromagnetic radiation to heat up the human body, as opposed to the threshold for other potential health hazards like the symptoms of EHS or cancer. And Ken said it's true that safety standards are based on heat, but he says there's a good reason for that. Heat is the only actual health effect that's been proven beyond a doubt by science.
Now, the exposure limits are designed explicitly to protect against heating. And the reason is that these are the only hazards that are well established. There's a lot of speculation out there, but you can't set an exposure limit to protect against a speculative hazard or an unproven hazard.
Which leads us to another of Joel's big points, that there are thousands of studies showing biological harm by electromagnetic radiation, which to me was one of the more convincing arguments.
What's going on there? Like, do you think these studies are enough of a basis to make that conclusion? Like, how could it be that, you know, EMF isn't harmful and yet there's like all of these studies showing that it is?
I've been involved in this field since 1971. When I got into this field, there were many studies, many of which reported some kind of biological effect of radio waves. And the activists would make lists of these studies and say this is proof that there's some hazard. Health agencies would do a critical analysis and not find any clear evidence of a problem. And so now, 50 years later, there are several thousand studies involving biological effects of radio waves. Activists are compiling uncritical lists of studies. Health agencies are doing careful reviews and still not seeing any clear sign of a problem. But of course, they say that more research is necessary.
So to say there are lots of studies doesn't mean there are lots of well-done studies. That's something another scientist I talked to mentioned as well. With scientific research, you get all kinds of results. There's natural variability, false positives, false negatives, which means you can't just go off of any one study. You have to look at them in the aggregate, aka a systematic review. But to do a systematic review, Ken says, the studies have to share at least some standards.
A large fraction of the studies that are published are poorly done, small studies, unblinded fishing expeditions. The better done studies tended to show small effects or no effects, whereas the poor done studies tend to show all sorts of effects. So what to make of this is something that really nobody really knows how to handle.
I took what I found back to Reza Ganjavi, the guy with EHS we talked to at the start of the story. And I told him how hard it's been trying to figure out what's true and what isn't.
And it's kind of difficult because, like, I'm not a scientist, so I can't go through these thousands of studies and say whether or not they're good or not. So I basically just have to, like, take scientists, you know, these scientists say these are good studies. These other scientists say they're not good studies. So it's like, it's kind of hard to know what to believe, you know?
But Reza was way more worried about the people I'd chosen to interview.
Ken Foster, very good. So he's the scientist with the least credibility in this field because he has extreme conflict of interest.
As it turns out, Reza has a whole page on his website dedicated to Ken Foster's alleged industry ties. He had similar feelings about Eric, the Dutch scientist I interviewed who works for ICNIRP.
ICNIRP is the problem. ICNIRP is a complete scandal itself. It's a pro-industry body which pretends to be neutral.
As you might remember, that's an accusation Eric addressed in our interview.
Even tight connections with the industry, these allegations are completely unfounded.
As for Ken Foster, he has received industry funding to do research. Now, some people like Reza would argue, that's all we need to know. He's an industry shill. We shouldn't listen to him. I asked Ken what he'd say in response. He wrote back saying that he had done a few projects funded by industry groups, but that sponsors have no say in the content of his papers, and they don't even get a chance to see them until they're accepted for publication. He added that on the whole, most of his papers are done without industry support. Despite the fact, he says, that in the US at least, there's virtually no funding for research in this field. And if the industry didn't support this research, nobody would. He added, quote, "If the activist thinks that he or she can improve on my results, I invite him or her to do so." At this point, I figured I'd gotten about as far down the rabbit hole as I could. And the only thing I could be sure about was that I wasn't sure of anything. As much as we'd like to believe that science is pure and purely objective, it almost never is. It's also not a monolith. Inside science, there are competing forces and competing theories, and it's not always easy to decide what's true or who we should believe. We can be swayed by money, by relationships, by personal experiences and ambitions and biases. But one thing Eric, the Dutch scientist I talked to, said stuck with me. He wrote, "We are also part of society and exposed to the same EMF as everybody else, including our children and grandchildren. We wish the best and a safe living environment for everyone."
That story was reported by Liz Tung.